going into the next series. You guys talked about defensive principles and kind of just staying with it no matter if they get beat or not. How important is that going through the series? How explosive Atlanta is?
It's huge. I mean, Atlanta plays at a high pace. Transition defense is a huge thing. They got multiple scorers on the wing that like to attack the basket. They're different than L.A. They're not a post-oriented team, although they have good post players. It's more of a guard-oriented team. So we need to cut down their penetration, take away their transition, and then stay with the principles that have gotten us this far. Good team defense, blocking out, not fouling. Those are the things that are important in a series like this.
All right. It's mostly a young team. You got some quality vets sprinkled in. If you could just take a moment to talk about the leadership and how important it is on the floor, especially after, you know, in that elimination game.
Well, I think it's been important. I mean, you know, Christy and Elena have played in the finals before. They have great leadership. Crystal and Latoya have a lot of experience. Mo Curry has experience. So they can kind of, you know, talk to the other ones. But luckily, you know, a lot of our other ones have been through at least last year's playoff series. Other than Ariel Atkins and Maisha, they've all played in playoff series. So they know what to expect. They know that, you know, a five-game series is different than a one-game elimination. So you're going to make adjustments. We're going to play an Atlanta team that's had a week to make, you know, some new stuff if they want to. So we're going to have to, you know, adjust on the fly the first game, and then it's a chess match after that.
Lastly, obviously, I'm sure Elena's everything, you know, you guys wanted and more to this point, year two. One of the things I feel like she's really been improving in is how she passes out of the double teams. Yep. It felt like last year it was just kind of, okay, I have to pass out the double team, versus this year. It feels like she's either getting the initial assist or the hockey assist out of it.
Exactly. I mean, she's learned that what she can do to other teams with her passing. You know, when she was young, she was a point guard, and now she's starting to get some of that vision back. You know, she was asked so much by Chicago when they had her on us last year to just go score. Now she's got enough other scores around her that are knocking down shots. She's finding out that making a great pass early in a game makes it easier for her later on, because teams are now afraid to come in full out double when they know other teams are making, other players are making shots.
Welcome to another episode of the Focus TV. Joined tonight by Octavia Wyatt, Cardell Dudley, Wilson Tarpe Jr. We're here for another night of discussion, all topic sports. I think for the most part, I don't know what you got to wrap for. Can't make finite statements like that. Look, man, I'm always shaking rapid fire. I have no idea where this is going each and every week. But if you guys have been following us on a regular basis, at least on social media, if you don't, go ahead and do so. The Focus TV is that simple. Also, Finest Magazine and My Mono Sports. While you're doing all three of those, it makes life kind of easy. So we're going to start in the WNBA. We told you guys last week, you know, stop being lazy. Mm-hmm. Playoff games are actually televised. This is the second night of a doubleheader. I think this is going to continue until we get to the finals. So last week, last Thursday, that was the second round of elimination games. There's two elimination rounds, then two rounds where the best of five, the last being the championship or the finals. So the Mystics last Thursday at GW, the Charles Smith Center. And Cardell was right on point. He told me that environment was going to be crazy. He definitely didn't tell a lie in the least bit. The Mystics started a little slow, but once they got running, there was nothing the Sparks could do about it. They beat Los Angeles 96-64. The Mystics had five players score in double figures. Elena Deladon led the way with 19 points and 12 rebounds. Also had four assists. Latoya Sanders, who Cardell's been, you know, saying almost all year, and especially as of late on social media this weekend, that she needs more attention for what she does. And this is the honest to goodness truth. She doesn't get nearly enough praise for the role she plays on this team. 14 points, 7 rebounds, 4 assists. But what was most impressive were the 4 steals and the 3 blocks. When we talk about how good they can be when they do play defense, she's literally the biggest linchpin in all of that. On Sunday, Washington beat Atlanta on the road, which is, you know, it's kind of tough. Atlanta, if you guys have been following us again, been sharing that with you guys, that Atlanta, that's the top-ranked defense of the WNBA. It's one of the reasons they're so very successful. But in Game 1, the Mystics were able to pull that out, 87-84. Elena Deladon at 32 points, 13 rebounds. Ariel Atkins, the rookie, 15 points. Natasha Cloud, 13 points, 6 assists. Most importantly, Cardell, I know you love that part of Natasha's stat, the biggest one when you hit me on Sunday.
No turnovers.
I mean, that's literally what it came down to. They hit all 20 of their free throws. They had a big lead, but, you know, Atlanta's talented. They fought to get back in it. And, you know, some of the poise we got to see during this win streak the Mystics have had, they've won 10 of their last 11. With, you can kind of put an asterisk next to the one that they lost, being that it was against Minnesota and they took their starters out when they found out that they weren't in contention to get the second seed on the last day of regular season. So we're going to take a couple minutes just talk about the Mystics, where they stand. They literally, they're about to tip off if they haven't tonight at 8 p.m. So, you know, as they go into game two, what's on your mind going into this?
Just carrying over the defense. You know, that's what won the game. It was a close game. You know, just because Deladon had 32, a couple other players showed up, you know, did their thing. Neither team shot well for the most part. The Mystics had the edge on 3-point shooting wise. They held Atlanta to 28% shooting, and they shot 38%, you know what I'm saying? So that's kind of where, you know, it kind of, you know, they kind of made up for it. I mean, my fault, 42% from the three-point range. That's what it has to carry. We've been saying that all year. Their offense never really been the issue. They've always consistently scored in the mid to high 80s or something like that. It's when their defense is shaky is when they lose. And that's where when they turned it up late in the season, and I believe 10 out of the last 11 with the last loss being against Minnesota in a regular season finale when Atlanta secured its second seed. And you know, at halftime, and Tabor got worried. He just rested the starters. Let's get the rest started already because they really were playing for nothing. Truth be told, maybe they would have an 11-game winning streak. So that's what I'm looking at, especially against Atlanta with the number one, you know, defense. It's going to be a grind. And I know Angel was out. I know Hayes get all the headlines. She's all WNBA. But the strength for me is their front line. You know, even though Deladon had 32, you don't really see Deladon getting a shot blocked one-on-one like that, like what you saw from Breland and you know, Williams and whatnot. So, and they were kind of off on the offensive end. You see what I'm saying? So was Hayes. Hayes was off. You know, she got going late in the, I think the fourth quarter or whatnot, but she was like 2-for-9 through the first three quarters. So they did an excellent job. I just want to see that defense continue. And if they do, you know, I think they'll be fine. Even on the road, Chrissy Tolliver had an off night. I expect her to play better, you know. So if they just combine that, they'll be fine. I know that because they have no turnovers.
Man,
I mean, you know, from your backcourt, and they only had 4 turnovers as a team. That came from the frontcourt, 2 from Deladon, 1 from Hawkins, and 1 from TRP. So your guards didn't even turn the ball over. That's insane against the number one defense in the league, like when in a playoff game.
Dude, and again, just not to keep, you know, driving this point home, but Atlanta on the perimeter, even without Angel, darn good defenders on their perimeter. You brought up Tip Hayes already. Renee Montgomery is a dogged defender. You know, Brittany Sykes. They have athletes on the perimeter. So to do that, and also want to bring up the point and talk about the job that the Mystics perimeter players did to hold, you know, for Tiffany to get off to such a slow start. It wasn't just all her. Like, the Mystics played a big role in that. And again, both these teams can score. Like you said, it's going to be all about who can dictate the game defensively.
And I really don't think people, because obviously not too many people came to miss a game, I really don't think they realize how deep the strength and their depth is for the Mystics, man. Like they literally can go 10 deep. It's that serious. And like you said, Hayes and Montgomery, the reason why they were off is because they're not just dealing with one or two, you know, guards that can defend. When they go to the bench, there's other guards coming in that can defend. Then when they come back, they fresh, they can defend. You don't get a break. That's what wears teams down. And then late in the game, obviously, you know, that's when they kind of take you out. And with the Mystics not shooting well, you know, even despite Deladon's big night, you know, the reason why the Mystics went on the offense, man, because they didn't miss a free throw. So they don't really make mistakes. They're not turning the ball over. They're not missing free throws. The rebound margin was the same, basically. Like, you can't afford to have all of that. You're not going to win because they're winning all the little things, all the 50-50 battles. They're winning all that. The Mystics are. So, you got to come to play. And what I like about the Mystics is balanced scoring. They focus on Deladon. She had 32. But, you know, Ariel Atkins, the super rookie, you know, been raving about her all year. She had 15 points on 50% shooting from the field, 60% shooting from three. Tasha Cloud shot 60% from three. had 13 points. Tiana Hawkins came off the bench with 11 points, 60% from the field. And that's with Tolliver shooting, like I said, 3 for 13. It's a balanced attack. So who you going to key on?
And that's the fun part. I asked you before, before we went live, do you anticipate, because this is something Atlanta's going to have to decide. You mentioned Breland and Williams and the great defense they play. Mm-hmm. And, we don't see Della Don get her shot blocked too often. But at the same token, her getting one-on-ones, I don't care who it is, I don't feel like that's something you want to continue. Because when she gets in a groove like that, and after she gets going and then you send a double, like you said, what she has complimenting her mm-hmm. is strong.
But for me, great players going to find a way. So yeah. You can send a double. You've seen her get double. She yeah. still put up points. So what you're risking is her finding other players to get going. Like I said, Christy Tolliver, I know they're going to be up. And if they get going, you really have no chance. So, you got what you want to do. I'd rather just have the usual suspect get hers. We're going to try to shut everybody else down. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? It'd be different if she didn't really have a lot of help, so to speak. Like, it's just her, maybe one other player. I mean, they got about 6 or 7 players that are going right now. They've been going all playoffs since the end of the season, man. So, they just got to play great team defense, man. They got to rotate. This person going, we got to slow her down. So, it's hard. But it's hard because the ball movement, the execution, and it's led by Cloud. That's why I always say she's the most important player because she feeds that. Yeah. She turns down so many shots because she's not going to bail out the defense. Just look how many games we see, not just in the WNBA, NBA, where we'll see teams just force up bad shots, yeah. bad three-pointers. That's basically a turnover, which bails the defense out. She don't let you get away with that. This ain't a good shot. I can shoot it, but no, I'm going to take it back out. We got about 10 seconds on the clock. We're going to run this offense. We're going to get the ball in the Dallas. No, we're going to make you work. And that's what Tabal preaches. They're going to make you work defensively. And you're going to get worn down. You're going to make a mistake. And then that's when they capitalize.
A perfect example of what you talk about with Tasha. A lot of times when she comes downhill with her size and athleticism, she can go to the cup every time. But as she approaches, the closer she gets to the rim, a big has to, you're drawing a big. And that big's leaving LaToya, mm-hmm. that mid-range jumper is easy. Or if the big's on Elena, do you really want to leave that? Oh. And that's why we've been saying all year, offensively, we don't worry about the DeMar. It's literally all defense. Mm-hmm. This is the reason why, because offensively, even on a bad night, they're a tough team to stop. That's just a whole lot of problems for anybody defensively to deal with. But
with Atlanta, one other thing, thing that Atlanta has a shot at yep. that I was looking at is with their shot blocking, they had 7 block shots in game 1 from Breland, 4 from Breland, 2 from Elizabeth Williams, and 1 came from a guard. It's hard to get points in the paint.
Yeah.
And that's where Della Don, she kind of got a shot block, pump faking and stuff like that. She took it to mid-range. She took it outside. If the Mystics don't hit jumpers, then – It could be interesting. So they have to hit shots from the outside, which will draw them out, and then they can, try to get inside, get to the free throw line.
And before we move on from this series, obviously, because, one of the teams we're talking about is the team that's from here, and, it's our job to cover them. One of the differences you can see, as well as, just to keep in mind, is respect to everything Atlanta's done. You don't want to talk about people that aren't available at the same time. But at the end of the game, you saw a team that had their closer and a team that didn't have their closer.
Yeah, Angel.
Not, and this is not to make excuses or anything, but there's a big reason. I think you said last show, talk about, as opposed to on social media, talk about a franchise player, Elena's kind of lived up to that every sense of the word.
No doubt.
And, I love what the growth and stride Elena's made, but McCall, that's a different, it is a different series. Both teams have their closers. It's still going to be entertaining. It's going to be great because they're both very good, well-balanced teams, but you know what it is when you have a pecking order down the stretch. It's a different type of luxury.
And a veteran, leader. Like I said, franchise players get thrown around too much. It's just you might be the best player on that team, but you're not a franchise player. They're not going to put everything on you to carry. You're not that player. You're not that good. Della Don is one of those players. Angel McCautry is. Mm-hmm. You see what I'm saying? You see the difference. She set out last year. They were lottery. She come back, second seed. They made a couple of additions, but that's mm-hmm. her because she's one of the best all-around players to ever play, period. Yeah. So when you lose that's a big blow. Just like if they lost Della Don, it'd be a big blow. So it's not really, matter of fact, when Della Don did go down for a few games, mm-hmm. it was a completely different team. Mm-hmm. So you need, you feel a franchise player. Like, you could tell a franchise player in any sport is when basically – let's say they get traded or whatever, the whole league feels it.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? Like, LeBron goes to the Lakers, they make the playoffs. Oh, man. Especially when KD went to the Warriors or mm-hmm. when DeMarcus signed up. Everybody mm-hmm. just like, God, you, NBA All-Pros, like, come on, man. For real, mm-hmm. you don't have – you feel it. The whole league feels it. And then you scrambling, trying to hold up. We got to make some moves because we might have to deal with that, especially if you're mm-hmm. in the same conference. When Deladon was to the Mystics, it was on because it was just like, okay, we got somebody, especially when Meason was there. It's like, okay.
And that's the craziest part mm-hmm. of all of this.
She comes back next year.
Emma comes back next
that's
year.
That's all. So that's what people want. That's why I'm like, if right. they get this chip, it can go on a run.
Just a reminder.
That'll
again,
be crazy.
You know, just talk about Emma. This is somebody who's at the top of the league in 3-point shooting. As a big, that's what's coming back. And again, to an already a team that's already deep, you know, the rich get richer, only make things better. Yeah. But there are two series going on.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, the other one.
You know, it's easy to talk about the two, you know, the two veteran, you know, that bond, that UConn bond between those two veteran leaders.
Yeah, but right before y'all go there, because I've been, you know, keeping up with the game while listening to you
Thank
guys,
you.
Just so y'all know, y'all are like spot on.
What?
Right now it's 11-6, and to me the biggest takeaways, and there was another block. They already got two blocks, and the defense is really what's lackluster right now. They're taking them to the basket, getting offensive rebound putbacks just like just now. It looked like they tried to get Christy Tolliver started early, so she scored the first 2 points, but it's 13-6 right now, and they're struggling a little bit. But just everything that you guys said that they need to do is exactly what they're not doing right now, mm-hmm. which is why I think they're in the position that they are right now. But it's still way early to have a lot of time to turn it around. And they make an open jump shots when they need to. Missed a couple layups, but it's still early, like I said. But I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Nah, we appreciate the update. All right, so we got the Mercury, Phoenix Mercury, and Seattle Storm. Mm-hmm. The Mercury beat Connecticut in Connecticut, 96-86. For one night, social media was fun with everybody posting, you know, the Diana memes about what she said and all that other stuff. Fun stuff, but biggest thing there, Seattle, with their, you know, their newly crowned MVP, Breonna Stewart, they were able to hold off the Mercury. This is the battle-tested group. 19 of Breonna's 28 points came in the first half, but, you know, as this theme, we're talking about, you know, other teammates, other players on teams. Jewel Lloyd is the one that closed the door on Phoenix. Phoenix went on a hellacious run to close that gap. Julie, 7 points in this game for Seattle to hold them off. So Seattle's up 1-0 in that series, and they play again. They play game two right after the conclusion of game two of the Mystics Dream Series.
What I took from it was they got to keep grinding out of foul trouble. Mm-hmm. She got a foul trouble. That's when the game kind of got away from them. They were leading at the one. The Mercury were, and then she picked up her second foul at the 8:43 mark in the second quarter. Seattle found a rhythm, and you know, it was just a dogfight after that, but Seattle pulled through. You know, matter of fact, I did some digging. They said, you know, in the first quarter, the Storm shot 2-for-6 in the paint when Griner was on the mm-hmm. floor while shooting 7-16 from the perimeter. In the second quarter with Griner and foul trouble, the Storm shot 6-9 in the paint. You know what I'm saying? That's the difference. And they got comfortable. You know, you get in a rhythm, then yeah. it's on. You know, and then she's obviously aware, I don't want to keep picking up fouls, so she's not going to be as aggressive with shot right. blocking, you know, little stuff like that. Also, another matchup I'm looking at that I think will decide the series that a lot of people may not be paying attention to is the point guard matchup between Breanne January and Sue Bird.
Yep.
Look, the big three for both teams, they're going to cancel each other out. Like, Tarazi, Bonner, Griner, you were Griner and Foucher, they scored 65 points.
Mm.
And Stewie, Lloyd, and Howard, they scored 71, so that's pretty much even. The battle between the point guards was decided. And game one, Sue Bird won the matchup. Basically, January, she had a decent game, 10 points and 2 assists on 50% shooting. But Bird finished with 10 points and 10 assists. So at minimum, she accounted for 30. So she won the battle 30-14 at the minimum. That was the game, you know, right there. So, you know, Breanne January, she's going to have to step up. If she can't do it offensively because maybe she don't get enough shots, try to distribute the ball or slow down Sue Bird, you're going to have to figure out something because they got home court. Like I said, you're not going to really stop Stewie just like you're not going to stop Tarazi. And, you know what I'm saying? So it's going to come down to the others. And right now, you know, after getting one game, the Storms, the others play better.
Man, so if you've been listening to what we've been saying and you still haven't watched the game, you should probably get to doing so. You're missing two very good series.
It's on right now, guys.
that have started in WNBA playoffs. We're going to take a quick break when we get back. Octavius, you know, she has her NFL segment for you guys. It just finished week three of the NFL preseason. We're getting closer to week one.
Finally.
Little by little. We're going to take a quick break, and when we get back, Octavius NFL segment right here on The Focus TV. Welcome back. As promised, Octavia has the floor. The NFL segment is hers, so I'm going to turn my mic off to refrain from being petty during this Eagles session.
It's not. Yeah, it's definitely the Eagles.
It's you not. Know? I promise.
So I'm going to go ahead and just get out the way
now. Philadelphia East.
Man. And the NFC Philadelphia East.
that's what the segment should be called. Yeah.
Not this week, guys, I promise. So, like Wilson said, we're already done with the third week of preseason, which pretty much kind of wraps it up for the most part. A lot of times from past seasons, most starters don't play in the fourth preseason game for good reason, getting ready to get ready for the season. But we're going to start with the Giants. So the Giants, who are now 2-1 in preseason, defeated the Jets this past week, 22-16. Eli Manning did get to play some. He was 17 of 23, 188 yards. Running back Presley carried 12 times for 71 yards. And Sterling Shepard was 7 of 7 on receptions for 78 yards. It seems like they're kind of getting back to themselves a little bit, at least in preseason with the first team. It appears that they're trying to kind of figure out all the kinks from the past and from the past couple of seasons, and it looks well. Eli looks good. He kind of looks like the Eli from the past, so that's a good sign for them. Like I said, he'll probably be done until the season starts, which is probably a good idea. But of course, the biggest story coming out of the New York Giants camp this week is Odell Beckham re-signing. He is now the highest paid wide receiver in the NFL. I believe the deal is for $95 million, but it's $65 million guaranteed. So I'm sure you guys saw all the videos online of them partying in the locker room. I mean, I guess you partying for somebody else making money. I got to be excited for your teammates. So I guess that's something. I'll be like, you know, dinner's on you for the next year or something. But, you know, all in all, it was a good game for them. Of course, Odell Beckham and Saquon Barkley did not play again, which are the two most important people right now outside of Eli for them to keep healthy. Kicker Aldrick Rosas looked a lot better this week and was 4-4 on kicks, who had majority of their points. And like I said, pretty much everybody is probably done for the preseason, even though the Giants wrap up their preseason versus the Patriots this week. So next, we're going to go to the Dallas Cowboys, who are now 0-3 in the preseason. They lost to the Cardinals 27-3 in their third preseason game, which is this is going to be a recurring theme. Most of the starters didn't play. Usually a lot of people think the third preseason game is like the final dress rehearsal, like I said, since they don't really play in the fourth game of the preseason. But Dak, Zeke, Sean Lee, Smith, and Martin all did not play in a third preseason game. There were previous reports where Jerry Jones basically was saying, like, he doesn't want to see them anymore. I'm good. I want them to wait until the season start, which is probably a good idea because Dallas did have a lot of injuries last year, and I know they're trying to get away from that. But backup quarterback Cooper Rush didn't look too great this week as well. He was 11 of 17 for 93 yards and 2 interceptions. But from reports, he's still slated to be their backup quarterback. They don't think they're changing anything. So it goes back to my thought last week is how deep are they really going to be this year all around? If Dak was to seriously get injured, you know, would they really trust Cooper Rush to run the team for the rest of the year? Or would they be scrambling to find somebody that's not in the league, i.e. Cap, to come out and play? We'll see what happens. Their offense may be a little bit shaky, but their defense have been looking really, really good with standouts, Randy Gregory, Awuzie, Byron Jones, making it really tough on the receivers that they're playing against. So it's a good look for them right now. I'm sure they're waiting to get all their pieces back on the offensive side to see how it's going to work out when the season starts in week one. Next, we're going to go to the hometown Redskins, who are now 1-2. The Redskins lost to the Broncos, Cardale's Broncos, of course, I must say. 29-17 in their third preseason game. One question that I kind of heard a lot when doing a lot of research for this was a lot of people are wondering, did Alex Smith really get enough playing time in the preseason? He didn't really play much this preseason, this past game. He played a little bit, but
I'm
sure he doesn't. But I kind of just ran it back into Alex Smith is a vet. You know, hopefully he should be ready week one. Preseason shouldn't hurt or harm him one way or the other. If he played a lot, you know, you'd be sitting out there wondering if he'll get injured. But the only back thing is if he does start when week one starts and he does still look shaky and a little rusty, you know, it's going to call into question the coach's decision to sit him a lot during preseason. Maybe he should have got some more reps. We'll see, though. Of course, the most important thing for the Redskins this week was Adrian Peterson's debut as a Redskin. He didn't disappoint at all. 11 carries for 56 yards. He looked well. Like I said, I still don't feel like he'll be the Adrian Peterson of the past, but he'll do well for the Redskins this year. There should, in my mind, there should be no doubt he should be on the team and should be starting. But we are in D.C. Never know what would happen with that. Although, you know, the offense looked okay, the defense didn't look okay at all. A lot of the defense looked like they were slow a couple steps. Josh Norman got burnt twice for a 40-yard touchdown. The Redskins defense allowed a 24 and a 27-yard run for touchdowns on them. So it's a little bit shaky for them, but they have veteran leadership there as well. Swearinger, Josh Norman, all of them. I'm sure they're just getting their last little kinks out. And the Redskins, basically, since, you know, their preseason for their starters should be over, they should be happy that most of their starters came out of preseason without injuries, i.e. except for Darius Geis, of course, who tore his ACL. But most of them are healthy. They should be ready to go week one. And last but not least, your Super Bowl champion, Philadelphia Eagles. Had to throw that in there. I'm sorry, guys. All right, 0-3 in the preseason, lost 5-0 to the Browns. You guys know I watched their game from top to bottom, of course. And it was just, I just said, throw the whole game away. It was just bad. But there were some bright spots on each side. But right now, the offense is the Achilles heel. They continue to struggle with getting on the right page. Foles has looked downright awful. Like, there's no sugarcoating that at all. He's looked awful. They have 4 turnovers on the offense, and he was involved in 3 of them. Mm. He threw 2 picks, and he fumbled.
Super Bowl MVP?
Super Bowl MVP.
First pick?
Yeah.
Get the first pick?
Oh, you reaching out.
Carson?
Yeah, you're reaching out. I saw a tweet that I wanted to bring up where basically these are Nick Foles' 2018 preseason stats. He's 16 of 26, 171 yards, 6.6 average, no touchdowns, 2 interceptions, and a passer rating of 48.7. 2 fumbles lost, 1 recovered for a touchdown, and a safety, and 6 sacks. So although the game was 5-0, we gave them 3 of those points. I mean, 2 of those points, excuse me. Because literally, when I say Nick Foles tripped, he tripped over his own feet in the end zone. Almost got out of it because he did actually get the ball off and they caught it. It was in bounds, but they reviewed it, of course. And Myles Garrett literally tapped him while his knee was still on the ground. Safety. So
Tim Tebow's available.
Oh, gosh. but I did see another cool stat that basically it's with Foles, it's either he's really, really good or he's really, really bad. There seems to not really be a mid, something in the middle, which is to me why he is a backup quarterback. He's a backup quarterback, not saying that he could never amount to being a starting quarterback. I don't want to put that on him.
I'll say it, but go ahead.
But he is a backup. We are waiting for Carson Wentz's return, who did look really good in preseason. Pregame warmups. A lot of people were raving about how well he looked. He says he feels great. He feels good. Of course, it comes down to team decision, doctor decision. It's the same thing that Peterson has been saying all week as well. Same with the Redskins. It's the same with the Eagles. They get out of the preseason with minimum injuries, where they really did have a lot of injuries last year as well. The whole NFC East as a whole had a lot of injuries. There we go. I'm like, injuries.
I was going to let you get through it.
You know. Also, a report came out today that Alshon Jeffrey will miss the first 2 weeks of the season, which to me is no surprise. He's been battling an injury pretty much since the Super Bowl, if not before. So not surprised, but they should get Nelson Aguilar back. A lot of other wide receivers have been showing promise. Who knows who will actually step up to take the majority of the load, but we will see what happens. The defense still looks good, which is the only reason the game didn't get too out of hand, because to be completely honest, the Browns played really well, and it could have been more than 5-0. There was a goal line stance that went well, but they got out of it with just losing 5-0, which is remarkable, because it should have been worse than that, especially with 4 turnovers on your offense. But next week, I'm going to try to switch it up, since a lot of people not really paying attention to the last preseason game. Mm-hmm. I don't blame you, unless that's your team, of course. But try to see some narratives that could possibly happen as the season goes on. See, you know, some predictions, what some things may happen. So we'll see what happens next week.
Looking forward to it, sir.
How's Marquette King doing? You know, I don't watch. I just got, but don't think I forgot. Like, is he doing his job?
Marquette King?
Is he doing his job? So
I'm unaware. I haven't paid attention to Marquette.
I'm just saying.
I haven't paid attention to him either.
For you to raise your hand like a kid in football, what'd you just pull up?
He beefing with one of our radio hosts. Like, who? He just got there. That's all I'm saying. He on thin ice. I ain't forget it. Just because you with the team, that don't mean you cool like that, though. You ain't put in no work yet.
That's Sean Punter.
How many punts does he need before y'all good?
What's his average? I just need, is he doing his job? If he's doing his job, I chill. That's it.
We about to hit
a little bit. You know I'm not watching that.
I got you. I'm going to find out right now.
Before we get the break, it's always Jamal Hayward, 9450, the breakdown. That's so petty.
So petty.
This week's move: high cross, the low cross, over the top cross, the step cross. Again, high cross, the low cross, over the top cross, two step cross. Jamal Hayward, 9450 breakdown coming up. Right after that, you know, we're going to take a quick break, and I will come back to some DC United and rapid fire. You're watching the Focus TV. Welcome back to the Focus. Yeah, we have fun during our breaks. You know, luckily the camera's not on during that time. But as promised, DC United segment, you know, they've been flying high. They had a 5-game unbeaten streak. It's come to an end.
Oh.
They traveled up to New York this past Sunday. Well, technically, I guess New Jersey. It took on their rivals, the New York Red Bulls. The Black and Red fell to their rivals, 1-0. Kaku scored in the 56th minute, and that held up for the win. For DC United, shouldn't be too frustrated or upset about this. They created several chances. They just weren't able to capitalize on those chances. They had a really great chance in the first half when the ball found Neil Fisher on the far post, and the header just went over the frame. So, I mean, that wasn't a great moment for them, but they had several other chances. When they had quality opportunities, they just couldn't make the most of them. Still, you know, there's nothing to hang your head at about a tough loss to, you know, the second-best team in the Eastern Conference. The good part about this, if you look at the standings, they didn't lose any ground. For DC United, they're still 2 points behind New England. They trail sixth place Montreal by 6. So, you know, they got 2 home games this week. If they get both results, they take care of business twice this week. That gives them the 6 points, which, depending on what goes on with Montreal, you know, come Sunday night after the game, if they get, you know, 2 W's this week, they could be above that line for the first time this season, which is, you know, their goal. Anyways, but having a heavy home schedule definitely leans to their favor, but it's going to be tough. Philadelphia comes to town on Wednesday, and that's not a group that's just going to get out their way, because for Philadelphia, I believe they're in fifth place. The last thing you want is for a team, you know, 2 spots below you to get any traction, especially, you know, as you're trying to hold on to the space that you do have currently. So keep your eyes on that, you know, big game on Wednesday, big game on Sunday this week for the Black and Red. So, Cardell, it's rapid fire time, man.
Wait, before you ask your big, I do have the answer to your question.
Marquette King, because this is from the The petty files. Go ahead.
Yes. So in the first three games against Minnesota, he averaged 48.3. Against Chicago was 40.2. And then against Washington, 47. So that gives him an average of 45.1617. So how do you feel about that?
He got one more outburst. I'm bucking that out, radio host. You know, look, just kick, homie.
Just playing dance. He can't dance no more.
I tell you, what we got to do is find out how much better those numbers, those bad numbers, are versus who they had last year. And then we're not doing that. No.
Is this a 49er fan talking?
What? What about that? I'm not talking about wins. I'm just about a punter. I feel like I can at least talk about that. Gosh, it's a punter. It's safe.
I want no problems.
Oh, real quick with the Broncos.
About to be the first round pick.
Look, I thought this was cool. Champ Bailey. Pac-Man.
Yeah, okay.
Who doesn't get a lot of love from people. Champ, you know, paraphrasing quote, respects the hell out that guy. So, you know, hey, thought it was cool. Wanted to share.
That's great, man.
Rapid fire.
We're going to first off lead up with the division foe, Tyreek Hill. He says the Kansas City Chiefs will have the best offense in the NFL without a doubt. He said we got the best tight end, the best running back, to the best deep ball threat receiver, Sammy Watkins in addition, who can do it all, great offensive line, Hall of Fame coach. So the sky's the limit for us. It's up to us to put the pieces together. Do you agree that will happen?
I agree that the sky is the limit for them. I do, because they do have a lot of good position players on the offensive team. So I can see it, but this is still Kansas City that we're talking about. So, I mean, as great as all of those pieces are they all going to be clicking at the same time is the question. Because a lot of times, you know, Tyreek Hill is going off and nobody else is doing anything, or Travis Kelce is going off and then he does something stupid and they get a penalty or something. So I think it really has to do with, you know, if they're all going to click at the same time. And, you know, to me, some of it is maturity. If they're all going to be focused 100% of the time, but they definitely have the skill to do it. But are they actually going to do it? I don't know.
Yeah, I think part of that statement I agree with. I do think they have the potential to. I think they probably have the best big play potential.
Okay.
Most offenses in the NFL. I'd be okay if he said that instead. Because with Mahomes' arm, you can literally reach Tyreek, Sammy, you know, anywhere on the field. The challenge for me is I need for them to show me that they can navigate their way down the field without the big play at all, you know, at all times. You're not going to get the big play all the time. So sustaining drives, things like that, we don't know yet. It's a young quarterback. So I just want to reserve judgment on that.
I'm kind of on the long lines with you. I think it's ultimately going to come down to, you know, health. A lot of key guys go down different times of the season for, a long stretch. It's not like one or two games. They be gone for a lot. And Mahomes, you know, how well has he developed in year two? You know, you may have all these weapons, but if you can't deliver the ball where they need to be, you know, to maximize what you have, it don't, you know, it's back to like last year where you're putting the pressure on the defense to come through. You know, but definitely, I mean, it's been in the last couple of years, man. You know, I think a couple of years back, it was, 50-something that off? I mean, yeah, so they definitely got the weapons. It's just a matter of the young quarterback is ready to step up and do what he got to do. And if they stay healthy. LaVar Ball, it's been a minute since we had these guys on the show.
Oh, gosh.
Really?
We're doing so good, too.
Yeah. Man, we're doing great. Unbeaten streak comes to a close.
And they're back.
I believe you pronounce it BC. Pranay says LaVar Ball and Big Baller Man tried to destroy the Lithuanian club. The head coach, Coach Seska, says the Ball Boys were nowhere near the level of the LKL, which is the Lithuanian League, let alone the NBA. I quote, the first and most crucial mistake we made was allowing them, especially LaVar, think that they are in charge of the club, its decisions, its plans, and even the game. His boys were nowhere near the level of the LKL, let alone the NBA, which league obviously understands, seeing the draft outcome. And the most disappointing fact was that they had no energy to become better, and when they saw it was going nowhere, they started destroying the club, not paying out prize money to the big baller brand tournament winners. The first and most crucial mistake we made, you know, like you said, was just allowing LaVar to just think he was in control. What are your thoughts on what he's saying now?
I could have sworn we said that already. I'm not surprised. I don't know why they're surprised. To me, it was all in front of you. Like, you knew that had the potential of happening, and you decided to go along with the circus. You went along with the circus, and now you're mad because you're not in control of the circus no more. You're not the ringmaster. You know that's how he is. He's been like that with all three of his kids at every step of the way of wherever they have played. So I don't know what made them think it was going to be something different. And of course, if they wasn't getting what they were going to, what they thought they wanted or what they thought they deserved, of course they were going to do that. I mean, I'm not surprised at all. I think LeVar is the only person who really believes that his kids right now should be in the NBA and be on LeBron caliber and KD and all these other people's level, when to me they haven't paid their dues yet. They haven't really been able to study the game, play the game on a high level and a consistent level. So I'm not surprised at all. It's just funny to me that they thought it was going to be anything different.
Yeah, I'm with Octavia. I feel like you knew coming in that this group of people in the past has shown that, you know, they try to skip steps. I feel like the club, you try to skip steps and you got what you got. You chased the bag and you got the stuff that came with it. I don't really have any sympathy for the club at all. But I'm not surprised by any of it either.
You know how I feel about skipping steps. I'm old school. Yeah. I don't believe in that process. You know, it's a step by step. You got to master this step, then we move on. Mm-hmm. This is basically a big example of what happens when you sell your soul, you know what I'm saying, for some money.
And some publicity too, because that's really what they probably wanted.
I mean, that too, and basically they, you know, y'all used each other to get ahead, and then didn't work out, so y'all just basically had to divorce. I think the victim in all this are the youngest. You know what I'm saying? You know, what's his name? LiAngelo, he should stay at UCLA, and LaMelo, I feel always, you know, he had potential if he was going to be allowed to be coached correctly. And a lot of people didn't like when I said that, but I was just saying, well, his pops allowed him to be coached. We know that's not going to happen. They're playing in the league that they're doing, taking 50 shots and stuff. Like, you can't evaluate that for a pro league. And then you already burned bridges overseas through this situation. So what overseas team going to want to deal with you? And we all know where the NBA is. The NBA, I don't want to say they mean and ruthless, man, but they got – they got a business to protect, man. They got to have the best players. Otherwise, they lose their job. So it's a grown man league. They're not about to compromise that for you to fulfill some little publicity stunt and whatnot. And it's sad because the kid had potential. You took away his college eligibility. He's pretty much, you know, got a bad rap overseas. And the thing about overseas, when you get a bad rep in one league, it carries over to other countries. So you got a bad rep. You just got to hope that this lead take all that he's doing. And I'm not really seeing momentum from that, except people who just want to just hype it up. And I feel like that's the biggest, biggest loss in this whole thing, is that the kids didn't get a chance to get developed because of their father's pride. And you know, that's just a shame right there. Tiger Woods on President Trump, you know, they asked him, he said, "We all must respect the office." When pressed about it, some people being threatened by Trump and his policy, Woods said this. He said, "Well, he's the president of the United States. You have to respect the office, no matter who's in the office. You mean that like, dislike, personality, or the policies, but we all must respect the office." What are your thoughts on that?
I can respect the office and not respect the person that's occupying it. That's my belief and my feels with it. Because you're the president of the United States doesn't make you a good person. And I just feel like a lot of people are trying to sugarcoat it just because of, you know, who they are, and they have to be careful of what they say because they don't want to tarnish their brand and have, you know, the president of the United States, who is petty, beyond petty, you know, come down on anything that they're doing. So I get, you know, the backtracking and to the politically correct answers and things like that, but you know, to me, right is right and wrong is wrong. I can respect the fact that he is the president of the United States, I mean, because it's a fact, but that doesn't mean that I have to agree with what he does. I have to agree with what he says. I have to agree with what he tweets. I don't have to do that. And I feel like that at the end of the day, that, you know, we're humans. Like, I have my own human perspective about it, and you can choose to be respectful in that sense. But I don't have to respect him if, you know, I don't feel as though he's doing anything to help people.
Yeah, I'm with Octavia. I can respect the office, but I can't respect the person in it if he doesn't. Like, if he doesn't respect it, I can't respect the person. You know? So, I respect that position, typically, that power that it holds and the responsibility that comes with it. But I definitely can't respect the person that doesn't respect it and is wielding such power and, you know, the way that they're doing it. So I can't, you know.
I mean, I just try to stick to the truth. Yeah. That way you can just sleep at night, whether you like what's happening or not. Just stick to the truth, man. And the bottom line is the president is not a good person. The guy who's, he's just not, he's an evil dude. And that's the truth. And I was always taught, you know what, I'm not going to respect nobody that don't respect me and mine. And that's just how I roll. So for me, that's why I just address it like the dude who occupies the White House. Because I don't even feel like I deserve to give him the respect to calling his name. Right. You know, look how he handled. McCain that just passed. Because McCain was like, you're not invited to my funeral. Why would I invite you to my funeral after all the stuff you said and everything? And you sitting there with reporters with your arms like a little kid and stuff. And like, man, come on, man. You know, you know, for guys to keep just, you know, dodging this drone, you suspect. And, you know, no disrespect to Tiger Woods, great golfer, but, you know, he's been doing this, so it's not a shock, you know, the cobbling Asian thing. But the thing is, when you got caught up, they said you were black.
Facts.
With the quickness, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, I mean, I don't expect too much from his end, but we got to. That's the reason why he's in office now, because people just, you know, overlook BS. And instead of just dealing with the truth of what is, I mean, had people just dealt with the truth of what is, they would see even people we, you know, our kind of talking about, just give them a chance. Nah, man, when people show you who they are, believe them, man. Like, it's still people saying, I think I still believe his politics.
For hope, like, literally. It hasn't even been a full year, right?
Oh, God. Right? I hope it has.
Like, not
been.
To be funny, but it hasn't been a full year. But there's been, examples have we
this
got?
This might be two.
And like,
bro, it felt like 4 years. It felt like a full term.
I am tired.
Yes.
So, like you said, when somebody show you they are, like, I don't understand why it's so hard for people to accept this. Like, how many times?
What is going to take? Some nukes in the sky or some crazy stuff?
And we wasn't far off from that.
Yeah, God forbid. You know, what would it take for people to wake up? So, nah, man, no, we can't. Can't respect that as long as a non-respectable person is sitting in that seat. It's just the truth. It's reality.
It's ridiculous.
Giants wide receiver Odell Beckham Jr. Agreed to a 5-year extension, making him the highest paid wide receiver that's worth $95 million. $65 million guaranteed. What are your thoughts on that? Does it deserve it?
I do think he deserves it. I do think that the caveat in it is that a lot of people may think that there are other wide receivers out there that deserve it as well. I feel like, to me, it's his impact for that team. I always say, if the team has it and they can give it to him and they feel like he deserves it, then they can do it, you know. And he definitely deserves it because he's been the caveat for them. But, I mean, not the caveat, he's been the go-to player for them ever since he stepped foot on there, especially coming in after Victor Cruz. A lot of people thought Victor Cruz was going to be around for however long, and he got injured, and Odell stepped right in and didn't miss a beat, and he's been like that every year. So I definitely think he deserves this if the Giants can afford it, and obviously they can. So I'm happy for him. You know, I'm probably not as happy as he is, but, yeah.
I mean, definitely deserving, obviously. I kind of feel like he let the Giants off the hook. I think this deal, you remember how Julio had that big deal and he already wanted to like renegotiate? It has shades of that in it. The only thing different is that once Odell put pen to paper, he got $41 million of the $65 million guaranteed. So like, it's for 5 years, right? Talk to me in a year and a half. Because the money, like, you know, the NFL sends Monopoly money out a lot with these contracts. And it helps the cap and everything, right? But you get $41 million off top right now. $65 million guaranteed. There's 4 more years of this, right? I think he's going to have to renegotiate. I think they end up in a similar place 2 years from now.
I agree with you, but I think it's fair for what it because one playoff game, he didn't even play in that.
Yep.
The injury, the durability. Mm-hmm. Like, we all know. And the thing I don't like what people is doing, they comparing it, well, Antonio Brown should be the most highest paid, but they ain't got nothing to do. Like, Antonio Brown going to get his bread, though. Mm-hmm. They ain't got nothing to do with the Giants and situation. It's similar to, you know, the late 90s when KG got that big contract. He was, like, the first player to get that 120 and all that. And they're like, hold on, my man. He barely getting to the first round, you know what I'm saying? And obviously, Duncan and them were doing their thing and stuff. But, like she said, for that team, for what he brought to that team, you had to pay him. Or guess what? If he rolled, would you risk losing? It's way more. Like, I think people don't equate. It's not just the on-court stuff. It's feeling sick. People come to see the game and stuff. Paying attention to the Giants.
Jersey sales. Everything.
So, that player getting paid, think about the amount he's generating for that franchise. So that's what comes to the table when the agents sit down. Like, my player is generating $300-400 million for you. Man, we need this, right? I mean, it is what it is. They gotta, if they want to, now you can risk losing that, but guess what? That $300-400 million gonna go with that player.
Mm-hmm.
All I'm saying is, it is gonna be funny. You talk about somebody's impact, and obviously he has a bigger impact than the guy I'm about to name. But his buddy, look at what Miami's in shambles. Jarvis left, right?
Jarvis
in Cleveland, right? Okay, and
if he turned Cleveland around,
and this is all I'm saying, because I'm not saying the same impact, but I'm saying, like,
it's close,
and that's where I'm going is, people in Miami tried to pigeonhole this dude. He's only a slot wide receiver, right? We watched two of these dudes do similar things to a bunch of teams in college football, a year apart when they came into the league. All I've seen on the Browns, Jarvis has been everywhere but stuck in that slot. Meanwhile, in Miami, you're trying to figure out what's up, what's down, what's left, what's right. And if you just say what you said, if he plays a role in providing stability for the Cleveland Browns, I bet you Cleveland's like, that's money well spent.
They're going to tell them to give him a hell of a bag. Mm. People just got to recognize sometimes the value. It's not just about sometimes wins, mm-hmm. just wins or losses and performance, man. That value matters, man. And
the Hard Knocks speech.
I mean, that's leadership. That's leadership, because he had we gonna change mm-hmm. this. You know, it's Michael Jordan. Like, they asked him, what was the thing you learned from the best when you first got with the Bulls? He was like, you want me to be honest? He's like, yeah. He's like, not to be like them. He said, when I first got to the Bulls, I felt like they accepted losing in a way where they could sleep at night. But I couldn't sleep at night, and that wasn't my personality. So he challenged everybody, like, you going to get better, like, challenge them, guys wanting to fight them and stuff and all that. And that set the tone for what came later, being a dynasty, you know what I'm saying? You got to be uncomfortable to start winning.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happens when the culture is jacked up. You man, somebody got to step in there, oh, we going to change all this. This ain't about to happen, not with me here, you know, so... And speaking of paying players, let's get Aaron Donald and Le'Veon Bell there for their money.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. I was like, I know they like... Come on,
bro. Let's get those guys.
And I think they said Khalil Mack is holding out, too. He may not play the first game.
For both of those teams, like, and this is the thing right now.
NFL will be doing that.
And that's why I hate the franchise tag. I've hated it entirely. Not only can you do it once, but you can do it twice.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we're talking about impact, right? Mm-hmm. Love Antonio Brown, like the Steelers, all that good stuff. Levy leaves, that is not the same thing. Okay, Levy leaves, we see a year Antonio Brown without Levy, because we haven't seen that yet. Like, an entire year, right? Are we going to be looking at, like, the same people questioning, you know, Antonio should get more, be looking at Odell's impact a little different?
Possibly.
I don't know, because...
And I'm not knocking Antonio.
I know, not with him, because he a dog. He's a worker, he's different. You know, it might be hard to get those numbers, but he's still going to get it. They may not win as much. He still won't eat. You know, you can't stop him. It's just, it won't be as easy. He won't be wide open. But, I mean, I seen my man come back from injury last year in the playoffs on one leg and was still, you know, turning. Who was it? Jacksonville?
Yep.
Come on, son. He cold. He a different animal. So, nah, it ain't nothing stopping that till Father Time just, like, it's over. You know, so last question. Can't believe I have to ask this, but it's the world we live in.
I'm nervous.
San Antonio Spurs legend Manu Ginobili retired after 16 years in the NBA.
Yeah.
Former 57 pick. Won 4 NBA championships, 2 All-Star appearances, all NBA honors. Averaged 13 points, 44% from the field, 36 from three, 82 from the free throw line. Nearly 8-4 assists, 3 rebounds, 1.3 steals per game. One of two players, Bill Bradley, to win a EuroLeague, NBA championship, and gold medal in 2004. Well, he destroyed the United States. And, you know, that was one of the best games ever. Is he a Hall of Fame? Is this really a lot of people? I don't know.
Are you guys serious? Okay. Have you guys not watched him play, like, ever?
Yeah, oh, man.
Okay, yes.
How do we get to this place where we're asking call, dumb questions like
nah,
this?
Nah, like, it ain't something. Look, what is this? This is the...
And it's the information age. Like, how do you...
This is the, what they say on Twitter. My man say on Twitter, he's like, this is the post-1994 Twitter age.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
If you're not born before 1994, you can't speak on this, but...
Come on,
okay,
guys.
Okay, so one, it's a yes. Two, he didn't invent the Eurostep.
Nope.
Just because I saw that way too much on Twitter. And I was like, all right.
Busting bits, guys.
Jonas Marshall Lonis, look him up, kids. He was doing that in the early 90s with Golden State.
And I love Manu. Also, he probably had my Hall of Fame vote when he smacked the bat out the air.
In the middle of a game.
The hand-eye coordination was crazy. But, seriously, like, anybody asking that, just...
You just revoked your basketball card.
Don't talk to me about basketball.
Nah, don't
talk to
at
us
all.
As a program.
But he played against trash men and lawyers and doctors. That's what the 1994.
Hold on, he's been a part of a certain person's era, right?
Oh yeah.
Okay, cool. All right, so
you finally went there. Thank you.
Oh, I know. I look, you always get mad at me.
Because you be holding it back, say, you know.
I do, but I'm just saying, you know, with the trash man lawyers and all that type of stuff, he's a part of a certain person's era, has won a couple times in a certain person's era. So, I'm not going with that, that easy way out. Yes, he's Hall of Famer, and the fact that the question has to be asked, a lot of y'all
it's
need to stop.
It's a slap in the
Take
face.
Take advantage of things like Google, YouTube.
Basketball reference for numbers.
That would be
you
great,
need
too.
Another perspective.
Since some of y'all love numbers in certain cases. Yeah.
Wikipedia, they have all the accomplishments is right there. All you got to do is
read. All you literally have to do is type in Manu.
Outstanding art. Like, come on, man. Did you want to comment on that, too? Are you good? All right. Want to thank everybody for tuning in. As always, stay up to date.
Oh, before you get off, Mystics are leading 36-34 at the half.
And they are.
Belladonna has 10 points, 9 rebounds, or 4 assists. 2 blocks. She's not playing around.
So, yep. And they already started the draft lottery.
Yeah.
The Indiana Fever have 3.
Oh, boy. Okay.
And they are getting ready to announce
that's
2.
That's the third pick? Okay.
Okay.
2 is going to be, if he pulls this out this envelope faster, the New York Liberty.
Okay.
And they're...
The last team, Chicago, right?
Las Vegas.
Las Vegas gets another one?
They're waiting to see. They haven't pulled it out yet, but those are the only two people they have on the screen right now.
That's scary.
So, yes, Las Vegas Aces have the number one pick.
Oh, wow.
Aces about to get... Man, that team's about to...
Get that girl... from
Enrique from Notre Dame.
So it's going to be the Las Vegas Aces with the first, New York Liberty with the second, Indiana Fever with the third, Chicago Sky with the fourth.
That's tough. We'll see you guys next week. Focus TV. Get over to FinestMag.com and MyModelSports.com.